ओम शांति 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 ओम पीस गुड इवनिंग इट इज गुड टू बी विथ यू अगेन आई वेलकम यू विथ ऑल माय हार्ट फॉर दोज ऑफ यू हू आर हियर रिलेटिवली शॉर्ट टाइम New people, I do not give lectures. If you're waiting to listen to a lecture, you will be disappointed. I do not do sermons. Or give spiritual talks. This is satsang. Satsang virtually means to be with the self. Not with Robert. Robert is just a name and a form. The self is all-pervading. Therefore, when you are with the self at satsang, you are the self, you are consciousness. There's only one self, and you are that. The words I speak are just incidental. It's the silence and the space in between the words that is important. If you understand the silence correctly, you will awaken to the self, what you have always been, which is your true nature. Happiness and peace are your real nature. This is the self. Everything we do is really a search for the self, for reality. The thief who robs a bank is actually searching for happiness, for the self, and doesn't know it. Even the murderer believes he or she is doing the murder for the sake of happiness. They believe this will make things better for them. It will give them more freedom. Wars, man and humanity to man, is really a search for freedom, for happiness. The mistake that is made is those people do not realize that all they had to do was to turn within. They're trying to find happiness externally. This can never be done. For we live in a world of duality. Nothing is permanent. Nothing is ever the same. It is like the search for the golden fleece. You will never find it externally to yourself. The answers you're looking for, the happiness you're looking for, the peace you're looking for, are all within you. you are that. You therefore learn not to react to conditions, not to allow the world to cause you any type of reaction. For you realize the world changes from time to time. It is never the same. How can it bring you permanent happiness? You have all the answers. There is nothing missing. Everything that you feel is your imagination. Everything that you perceive is your imagination. The biggest mistake is that you imagine that you are a body. Therefore, if you imagine that you are a body, there must be other bodies also. You perceive thousands of bodies, millions of bodies everywhere, simply because you believe you are a body. You then believe you are a mind when you think. And you bring the world into creation. You bring the universe into creation. But you are none of those things. You are pure intelligence. You are not what you believe you are. There are no problems. There is absolutely nothing wrong anywhere. What are you saying? The world is your creation. Have you ever noticed when you get up in the morning, the first thing you think about is the personal self? As soon as you awaken, you believe you are the personal self. Therefore, everything begins to rotate around your personal self. You believe you have to think about what you're going to wear to work, where you're going to go for lunch. What your co-workers are going to talk about. You think about your job. And even say you take a walk before you go to work. Isn't the conversation in your mind always about you? True? You're always thinking about your personal self. And what are you trying to do? You're trying to avoid hardships and bring harmony into your life always. Even if you have a tremendous amount of harmony and so-called material happiness in your life right now, you still think about your personal self, thinking of ways to keep it. Thinking of ways that no one can take it away from you. You think about the stock market, about the diseases in the world, about murders, about rapes. You're always thinking about the personal self. What if I were to tell you that if you took your mind off your personal self, an all-pervading power would take its place and lead you in the right direction, thus bringing harmony and happiness and joy into your life that is beyond your imagination? Yes. All you have to do is to get the personal self out of the way. The personal self is the ego, the mind. All you have to do is to get them out of the way, and everything will be beautiful in your life. This is hard to imagine, I agree. For you have been brought up to believe that unless you take care of your situation, unless you look after your life and think about your life, bad things will happen to you. So you always have to be aware. You always have to be competing with the next person. You always have to keep up with the Joneses. Watch the news on television. See what's going on in the world. And you relate to those things. But how many of you can give all that up and give up personal self and look at the universe as one gigantic whole to be Rachel Allen? Not diversity, not multiples, but one. And keep your mind stayed on the one. Do you think your affairs will be ruined? Do you think you'll get in trouble at work because you're not thinking of your work? Do you think all types of dastardly things will happen to you? On the contrary, it has been revealed to sages since time immemorial that if a person can take their mind off their personality, off the self, then what you call God takes over, and your life becomes a life of bliss. I know this sounds far-fetched, and you think it takes a lot of spiritual work to get to a place like this, but it doesn't. You have to have the desire to go further with your life than where you are now. You have to be able to become disgusted with the world as it is. Not because of man's humanity to man, but totally disgusted with a world of change. You have to be tired of the world. whatever you put first in your mind, this is what you become. When you become tied to the world, and the world no longer has any feelings for you, and you no longer have feelings for the world, something happens within. You begin to go deep within. It happens by itself. Again, how does it happen? You have disgust for worldly pleasures and for worldly situations that transpire in the world. This is why a teaching like this is not for everyone. For some of you are only here to improve your humanhood. You do not realize that your humanhood is a product of duality. It can never go in one direction steadily. This is the reason why psychology, psychiatry have failed miserably. For the answer is not to find your human self, or to lift yourself above problems, or to learn solutions for your problems. That only lasts a short while. What you really have to do is transcend and transmute the very core of your being. You have to become something else. That something else is absolute reality. Pure winds, consciousness. You do not really become that. You begin to understand that you have to let go of all of your concepts, all of your preconceived ideas, all of these samskaras, all of the karma, all of the samsaras, all of those things have to go. How do you get rid of them? By coming to the realization that they never existed to begin with. That's right. They never existed. By coming to the realization that your body is an optical illusion. The word, the world, the universe has no substance. If you came to this conclusion, how would a problem affect you? It would be virtually impossible to be affected by a problem, because the problem is part of the worldly condition. And if the worldly condition were transmuted, where would be the problem? The problem only arises because you believe the world is real. When the world becomes nothing to you, and the world becomes nothing to you, only when you no longer react to person, place, or thing, you then become free. And the freedom is your joy, your bliss, your happiness, and your harmony. You begin to realize you do not have to look for these things for a better life or for harmony in your life. That already exists as it is. You simply have to remove your reaction, your belief that there is something in the world that has substance. You work on yourself by comparing the world, the universe, to the dream state. You know that when you have a dream, you go through all kinds of experiences, they appear real, you awaken, and the dream is gone. You begin to think about these things. The greater the thinking about these things, the sooner it happens. You know how far you've gotten on the spiritual path by what you feel all day long. Just think about today. What did you think about? Where were your feelings? Did you allow yourself to become depressed? Did you feel that the world has something to offer you and you become radiantly happy because of something the world appears to have offered you? Those are the things that you have to transcend. Those very beliefs that the world can either hurt you or do something good for you. And those are the beliefs that have to go. And as far as all of your feelings that something is wrong, somebody hurt me, somebody used me, somebody did something to me, forget all that. First of all, you realize that it's all karmic. How can anything come to you of its own accord? Nothing just comes. So if you find that you had $100,000 in the bank and the bank folds, how do you react to that? Do you cry? Do you stamp your feet? Do you jump up and down? Do you commit suicide? You simply realize that everything is karmic. There is nothing that comes from nothing. When you've gotten that far and you've found peace, things no longer disturb you, you can then go further and realize there is no karma. It never existed. It only existed for me at the time when I was frightened and I have no idea where things come from. At that stage in your life, karma is real. So you pray to God for relief. God comes to you in the form of a sage, or maybe a tree or a mountain, or a book, and makes you understand that the world is created by karma, and the way you react to karma determines what's going to happen to you from there on in. After so many years, perhaps, you go further and you realize karma never existed. My body never existed. The universe doesn't exist. God doesn't exist. Only the self exists. And of course, if it exists, it cannot be the self. So you begin to ponder that also. The day will come when you simply wake up. You become free. You can tell that's happening to you if you're becoming steady, if your moods do not change when you begin to feel the same all day long. You just feel happy, blissful, peaceful. And it doesn't change. There is no situation that you observe that can cause any change to come to you. The doctor may predict you have cancer and you've got a month to live. There's no reaction. For you realize who dies. You win $1 million in the lottery, there's no reaction. For you realize, to whom has this come? A car runs you over. You have to amputate your legs. It doesn't change your reaction. For you understand, the body is not you. Then you know you're making progress. You have not become self-realized yet, but you're way up there. When you awaken, you will know beyond the shadow of a doubt that you never had a body to begin with. There's no body that got hit by a car. There's no body that had cancer. There's no body that won $100 million. There's just no body. Therefore, you don't have to go out and save all your money and wonder what's going to happen to it. You do not have to save anything for a rainy day. For it never rains in a realized person. You do not have to take any precautions. You are simply in bliss. Yet, for all appearance sake, there appears to be a power, a mysterious power that always takes care of you in the right way. I know you're saying to yourself, how can this power be taking care of me if my legs have been amputated, if I've been diagnosed as having cancer? In your present state, this is a paradox. But as you go further, as you begin to understand, as you awaken, no one ever had cancer. No one had their legs amputated. No one won $100 million. You're home free. There is nothing wrong. Everything is all right. You do not hoard anything. You help the homeless. You forget about yourself, personal self. You give yourself away. It's like the story of Sadie and Irving during the Depression. One day Irving comes home and says, Sadie, this is Black Friday, we've lost everything. We're bankrupt. All the banks are folded, the stocks are folded, there's nothing left. Let's put our heads in this gas stove and kill ourselves. Let's jump out the window. We have nothing left to live for. So Sadie says to Irving, shh, Irving, take it easy, don't worry. Everything is okay. Irving says, how can you say everything is okay, Sadie? Can't you see what I'm telling you? It's Black Friday. We're ruined. We don't have a penny to our name. Come, let's kill ourselves right now. So Sadie says, have something to eat. Have some chicken soup. Irving says, how can you talk about chicken soup? Can't you understand what I'm telling you? Kaput, maroon. Everything's been wiped out. So Sadie says, no, Irving. I'll tell you a secret. For 40 years, every time we made love, I put away a dollar. And today we've got $4,600 saved. Irving's eyes open wide and he says, and to think I didn't give you all my business. And that's the way people think. But that's not the way life is. The real life. You've got to make up your mind that the world really has nothing to offer you. You see, you have to take a chance. You have to take a chance to love what you call God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your being. To love God as yourself. And feel deep in the marrow of your bones that all is well and everything is unfolding as it should. When you start the ball rolling, the mysterious power I've been talking about comes to your aid and protects you and watches over you. Makes you understand that all is well. When you awaken, others may see a car hit you and your legs being amputated. But you know that nothing has happened to you. Again, this seems very paradoxical. And I know some of you cannot really comprehend this. You cannot comprehend when a car goes over your legs and crushes them and they have to be amputated, that nothing has happened. Sounds impossible, sounds ludicrous. It does. But I can assure you it's the truth. How can a body that never existed be destroyed? If the body were real, then the experiences of the body would be real also. And we would have to look for a remedy. But since the body is not real to begin with, there is no remedy we have to look for. We just have to come to that conclusion in our heart. One of the ways you do this again is through self-inquiry. If it's difficult for you just to awaken through plain knowledge, through jnana, then you practice self-inquiry. Those of you who can. If self-inquiry seems difficult, then you must surrender your body and your world to God. If that seems difficult, then you do mantra japa. You chant mantras over and over again. If that seems difficult, you practice pranayama. Breathing exercises. And if that seems difficult, you simply pray your heart out to God. You should be doing one of those things. If you're spending your days doing nothing, what do you expect to gain? Nothing. I'm not speaking of the real nothing. I'm speaking of nothing, nothing. If you want to see some gains in your life and you refuse to awaken otherwise, you've got to do those things. I find the easiest thing to do is self-inquiry. I know all of you are here tonight can practice this if you really want to. This is really the practice of negation. You are negating everything in the universe, starting with yourself. And everything that seems to appear in your mind, you inquire, to whom has this come? That's all. You have negated the whole universe, and you negate all the thoughts by inquiring, to whom has this come? Who's feeling this? Say you're depressed. Instead of staying depressed or taking some Valium or trying to do something else that you learn to do, like, for instance, they say if you feel depressed, if you do physical exercise, it will get rid of it. Those things are only temporary solutions. When you inquire, to whom has this come, you're seeking a permanent solution. It comes to you that it comes to me. I feel depressed. You ponder the I. It is I that feels depressed, and not you. You say this to yourself. You observe the I. You follow the I. You trace the I. The I goes back into the self. The self is the ultimate originator of everything. When you trace the I back to the self, the substratum, you will realize that the I never existed to begin with. Therefore, your depression and everything else that is bothering you also does not really exist. You do not work on your problems, so-called. You work on the I, because it is the I that feels all the problems. It is the I that believes all the problems. It is the I that has all these preconceived ideas, all these concepts. It is the I that experiences karma, samskaras. It's all in the I. You therefore have to trace the I back to the heart center, which is the self, and be free. You have to do. Of course, as I said, if you will just awaken now, the reason that most of you will not awaken is because you are steeped deeply in your beliefs. Your belief system is very strong. We feel things too deeply. You remember something that happened to you 20 years ago, and you're still feeling it. You feel the reality of this world very deeply. Therefore, you will not awaken. Awakening comes easy to a person who can simply let go of the world. Let go of the body. Let go of the thoughts. Then you are awake. You have to practice some sort of sadhana. And self-inquiry is the fastest and easiest way to awaken. You negate everything. Whatever is left, you inquire to whom has it come. When it's come to me, I feel it. Where did the I come from? Who am I? I is really the self, consciousness. Therefore, only the self exists, and there is no universe. Practice, 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 till you bust. Feel free to ask questions.
Could it not be said that realization consists of getting rid of the idea that we're not realized?
Yes. Negating everything at the same time. Get rid of all your concepts, your ideas, your beliefs. Become totally empty.
Another thing I guess that's impressed me is any of the stories about Sri Ramana Maharshi, the one where some fellow was dying at the ashram and the others wanted him to go see this fellow, and he wasn't inclined to do so. They thought that was very strange, and finally he spoke almost to himself. He said, they would be pleased if I went to see this dying man. And he did go to see him. But he as the real self, knew that nothing was happening. But he went to see this fellow to please the other people, and I guess the fellow is dying. Can you comment on that?
Well, of course. The form of Ramana Maharshi had to take certain action for the sake of the devotee. Therefore, many times he did something for their sake because it pleased himself. He really understood that nothing was ever happening. No action was being taken. That all is well. But for the sake of the devotees, he would sometimes take a little action just to please them. But again, he had no mind, no ego, and there was no one home to do anything. It was total emptiness. So, to answer your question, what do you think? Where are you coming from? It always goes back to you, doesn't it?
Well, my idea was the same as what you just explained, but of course it's still intellectual.
Get rid of your intellect. You never had it to begin with. Do not believe in it. we shouldn't put ourselves down. When you put yourself down, that is blasphemy. You should never believe and think, I am not ready. It's too hard for me. I'm only intellectual. That's what blasphemy means. If you have to think anything like this, do not think at all. But rather keep understanding that I is not the body. I is not the world. I is not the universe. I is really consciousness, absolute reality. I am that.
Last week there was some discussion about the heart and the heart center and the idea that it's in the body, it's on the right side of the chest, and it seems like most of us realize that the center of our being is the heart, and we write songs about it, like, I left my heart in San Francisco.
We're talking about the wrong heart.
Well, it is said that it's on the right side of the chest.
Yes, but the San Francisco heart is the other one.
Well, he left his whole being there, or my heart belongs to Daddy. Or yours is my heart alone. That's a little nicer, perhaps.
Can you sing it for us?
Sing it, Fred.
But the one of the masters said that it's two digits to the right of the center line.
Mm.
I think maybe Sri Bhagwan.
Yes.
And something really fascinating is that in the Bible it says the heart of the wise man is on the right, but the fool's is on the left.
Mm.
And it's possible for an individual, it seems, to show himself that this is the case, because if I close my eyes and say, who, me, and point to myself, in my case, it'll invariably be, of course, I'm thinking about it now, and I've thought about it for a long time, but I'll point to the right side of my chest rather than to my head, which some individuals might think is the most important part of the body and mind. Any comment on that?
Yes, this is all in the books. The reason for that is people want to know where the self resides in the body. So this was made up so that people can follow the eye thought to the particular heart center on the right side of the chest.
Assuming that the body is real.
Yes. But I say to you, that there's no body and there's no heart. But again, there are some people who become totally confused. Where does God live in us? Where does consciousness begin in us? So we say, it's on the right side of the chest. And you follow the eye, thought, from the brain down to the right side of the chest. But this is for the person who is a seeker or even a disciple. For a devotee, there is no heart center. There is no right side of the chest. There's no chest. There's no body. There's no one searching. There's no liberation. There's no delusion. There is not even the self. There is just silence. So if you want to spend your life looking for your heart, then do so.
Feeling tonight, because I realized I'd heard this same set of ideas 4 or 5 months ago from you. And 4 or 5 months ago, when I heard you say, just focus in on the self and forget about your body and the situation you're in and the problems you're facing or you're trying to figure out, and just focus on the self, I get turned on, and I said, yeah, I'm going to try that. And now I hear the same set of ideas months later, and I realize, what happened? I must have forgot as soon as I walked out the door.
That's usually the case. That's why I have to keep coming back.
But I was really turned on to the challenge, because I remember I asked you about it. What a challenge, I kept saying. You said, yeah, to really just think of the self facing everything in life and just keep thinking of the self. And boy, I was turned on, and interest in the group here was strong. I don't know if the rest of them remember it, but my God, it's like, I hate to tell you, but it's like I'm hearing the same lecture and nothing happened in between.
That's coming. That's no surprise. That's why you have to vigilantly work on yourself. Vigorously.
It amazes me that I could be so excited and turned on and make like a dedication here and then completely forget it.
It's par for the course.
Don't worry. That's par?
You're not alone.
Maybe I want to raise your hand who's experienced that sort of thing.
Anybody else experienced that?
Yeah.
One other person.
Jay wants to take count.
No, me too. I'm careful.
Well, that's shocking.
You would be surprised how many people I meet originally for the first time, and after one meeting they send me letters and telephone me and send me postcards and tell me in person, Robert, I throw myself at your feet. I am your mother, I am your father, I am your sister, I am your wife. I am yours, do what you want with me. I usually say, okay, tell me the same thing in 6 months. At that time, they're usually gone. They found another teacher, they're gone somewhere out of town. And like George says, they forget everything. This is usually a slow process. It requires dedication. It requires a gradual unfoldment without looking for objects, without seeking time or space, without wondering how long it's going to take. If you can have that attitude and just be at satsang, that would be enough. You wouldn't have to do any practice. But because life hits you squarely in the head and you lose your way again, you have to keep practicing sadhana over and over again, simply because you've allowed yourself to react to life's conditions. But like I say, if you forget about time, if you don't think anymore, I want to be enlightened, you simply come to satsang. Something will happen. You will feel it over time. All of your samskaras will begin to drop away. Your karma will be burnt out. You will come to high conclusions by yourself. And you will be there. So take it easy. There's no rush. It took you a lifetime to be where you are now. Maybe 20 lifetimes. Maybe 100 lifetimes. Maybe 1,000 lifetimes. To be what you are today. Therefore, sometimes getting rid of all your stuff does not come overnight. Stop fighting. Stop being angry at yourself. And stop reacting. All is well.
Think of it going down to our heart.
Mm.
If the heart doesn't, well, what is the purpose of that? Is that just to help focus?
And it helps focus, it helps concentration, it makes you one-pointed, and it gives you something to go for.
To go with
for? Something to go after.
So,
whereas if I didn't tell you that, everything would appear too abstract. So as you go into your heart, you feel yourself awakening, becoming firm, and you feel happiness and you feel bliss.
That's more particularly one-pointedness.
Yes.
And it helps to see further. So with the one-pointedness is to direct yourself inward so that it's less abstracted.
The one-pointedness, after that, you will experience a total void, which is not really a void, but we call it a void for want of a better name. You will be pushed into the void, and you will go through the void into the self, where you become the self.
So in other words, when you say to make it less abstract, in other words, the heart is internal, it's in us. So you're helping us to turn, in addition to the one-pointedness, the heart is physically in our body, so it helps us turn inward, thereby looking within the, quote, looking within the self.
It helps you dive into the spiritual heart and become calm and peaceful and one-pointed. So you can go further.
Brother,
Then
the heart is like a metaphor for the bliss and love that one begins to feel.
The heart's a metaphor for the soul.
and it slowly becomes a home?
It slowly becomes you. You are the soul. There's no body, there's no heart. It's like someone coming over to me and said, Robert, I have to take a rest, I'm very tired. If I tell you the self never gets tired, it will not help you. Because you are tired and you're feeling tired. You have not experienced the self. So by my saying the self is all peace and bliss and it's impossible for you to be tired, instead of telling you this, I say, there's a bed. Go take a rest. And you're grateful that I showed you the bed and you lie down and take a nice snooze. And so it is with the spiritual heart. Where does the eye go when I trace it? If I tell you at this stage of your development that it goes nowhere because it never existed, you will look at me funny. For that cannot very help you at your present state. So I tell you there's a spiritual heart on the right side of your chest. That heart is God, consciousness, the self. And if you follow the eye to the spiritual heart, the eye will eventually disappear and you will become the self. That you can understand. Now can you see why all these stories are invented? So the average person can do something tangible. I can sit here and tell you again, there is no heart, there is no self, there is no I, there is no body, there is no God, there is no enlightenment. And you look at me, what do I do now? So I tell you all these stories.
Then why do we have to practice?
Because you do not believe you are the self and you will not awaken.
Is it a belief?
No.
Do you believe you're the self?
No.
It must be a direct knowing.
That you are the self?
Yeah.
Direct knowing, yes.
It's not a belief.
Direct awareness.
Yeah. If we believe we're going to become something, it brings in the element of time, and time itself is...
Yes. Time does not exist. Space does not exist. But as long as you feel that you are still the body, then they do exist for you. Again, it's like you're having a dream. And I'm trying to awaken you, but you will not awaken. You're having too much fun. You don't want to awaken. I'm shaking you and shaking you and punching you. But you refuse to wake up. This is the same thing. The reason we believe we die is because the self is trying to punch us again and again to wake us up, but we won't wake up. So he finally gives us the final punch. And we appear to die. Then we come back and do it all over again. Or we appear to. Simply because we refuse to awaken. Yes. I also said everyone is hellbound for heaven, whether they like it or not. It's the same thing. we will awaken. Everyone here will awaken eventually. The dream will be over eventually. How long it takes is up to you.
And so that is choice, or is that predestination?
In that case, predestination does not exist. If you were just awakened, there is no predestination. There is only predestination when you do not awaken. And you believe you are the body. Then predestination comes into play. But if you awaken, then for whom is there predestination?
So that's the one freedom we have.
Yes. The awakened one has nothing to be predestined about because there's nobody there. So predestination to have effect, there has to be somebody home. There has to be an I. If there's no longer an I or a mind, how can there be predestination?
Sense of sensing an inner light or a vibrational body, a subtle vibrational body, where is that in relationship to being in the I?
That is the I. That I see the light. Remember the song, I See the Light? Hallelujah. I see the light. I hear the sounds.
And the subtle vibrational body?
The subtle vibrational body is also I. Nada, I, all the same.
So the lights are on, nobody's home? Is that so?
When the lights are on, somebody's home. When the lights are off, nobody's home.
So there's all still the personal I?
It's all externalized mind, or personal I. It's all the I. Anytime you have an experience, isn't I having the experience? No matter how high the experience may be, you come and tell me, Robert, I am having an experience. So I said, get rid of I and you won't have one. You don't want to have an experience. That's not the goal. The goal is to become a good for nothing.
Any experience is in the reality.
Any experience, yeah.
It's more of a knowingness than a sensing or a feeling.
It's pure awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Knowingness. Jnana.
And that's not an experience.
No. It's way beyond experience. That makes sense because to have an experience, there has to be an experiencer. Somebody has to have the experience. But if there is nobody, how can there be an experience? Even the stories you hear about the school of Jnana that claims in order for a Jnani to be real at the time of death, the body dissolves and turns into a rainbow. There's a school of yarn that believes this. But think for a moment. If there was never a body to begin with, how can it turn into a rainbow?
Where did such stories as that originate?
From the mind.
From the mind?
Certain teachers.
In historical context, there was some point where a teacher taught such a...
Yes.
Well, where did this happen? What is that?
Was there a significance to that teacher teaching that concept at that point? Like you're using concepts with us to help us. Mm. Would that teacher use that concept perhaps to help?
Perhaps. But you'd have to ask the teacher. I cannot speak for the teacher. I can only relate my own experience that there is no body to begin with. So the body cannot turn into rainbows or colors or oranges or apples or anything else.
So Robert, is the knowingness, it's not grounded in any of the physical, it's totally free of that.
Totally free.
Totally free. Yes. So this waking dream takes on the waking dream nature. Instead of being real, it really becomes you know it as unreal.
Just like the water in the mirage. The water appears to be real, but upon investigation you find out it never existed. And so it is with the world. The world appears to be real, but if you inquire and investigate, you will find that it never existed.
So if a person is talking to me, Robert, and they're expecting an answer, my proper attitude would be to see us all as what?
You do not fake it. You see what you see. You can't imagine that you don't see anybody when you're talking to somebody. That's foolishness.
Do I have a sense of knowingness that this is a cosmic sound I'm hearing, and that I open my mouth and some cosmic answer will come out?
On the contrary.
On the contrary?
You do not act out anything. You're not going to imagine you're something you're not. You have to be truthful to yourself. But you have to work on yourself until you get to that place where you really feel and know and understand, and you become aware that the whole universe is consciousness. And person, place, and thing are simply superimpositions on the screen of life.
But if a person asks me a question, and I answer them with with the thought that they are an individual person, I'm only hardening my, let's say, wrong attitude that they are an individual person. So I'm only hardening that misperception. So wouldn't I be better off in just shining them off? And then I don't harden that misperception.
Tell me how many friends you'll have, George.
What's more important?
If someone comes to you and tells you...
Enlightenment or having friends?
Enlightenment, of course, but the thing is, you're not wanting to make a fool of yourself.
For God, what's worth it? For enlightenment, it's worth it.
You want to understand where you're coming from and be truthful to yourself and act accordingly.
But then I'll be stuck in duality.
No, you won't. Because you're working on yourself.
Which self?
Your own self.
Your personal self?
Sure, you're working to get rid of it.
I don't see how I'm getting rid of it if I'm talking to the person as if he's an individual self and I'm perceiving myself as an individual self. I don't see how I'm...
Because you're pinning it on, you're faking it.
No, if I'm not faking it.
If you're not faking it, it will be a different story completely. Then you would see yourself and everybody else. There would only be one self.
Okay, that's more what I need to hear, Mom.
It seems like, I said this before, but it seems like it's a sudden reversal that what seems real now turns out to be unreal, and what seems unreal turns out to be real, and then there's sort of absolute reversal. Is there like a critical mass of working on the self? You go along, and all of a sudden this reversal occurs?
I don't like the term critical mass.
You like the hungriest monkey better?
Yes. As you begin to do sadhana, self-inquiring, you begin to negate the entire universe. And what is left is the self.
We're talking about a critical masslessness then?
Critical madness. If you want to call it a critical mass, enjoy yourself.
Masslessness.
I get it. Yeah. If you could drive us crazy, we'll reach enlightenment.
You're already crazy, George.
I'm already what?
Crazy.
That would help. If you could, like these questions that are going back, we're not able to keep up with understanding it. I think our minds are going to burst. And that might do it.
Well, if it happens, it happens.
Actually, if you talk crazy for a while, that would help.
All this.
It's only ever going.
like blow our minds.
It's already blown.
I'm not blown yet.
There's no mind to be blown.
Robert, why are people unwilling to do sadhana yet? They keep coming week after week.
Because the pull of samskara, the pull of past karmic patterns, is very strong. And it makes you worldly. But yet you've been touched by something in a previous life, so to speak. You have done sadhana, and you're compelled to come here at this time. But still something is pulling at you, the world, the universe. It makes it very strong. So you're unable to do sadhana. But as you come here week after week, month after month, year after year, you begin to melt. Just like a snowman out in the snow, and the sun comes. Day after day, day after day, the snowman begins to melt till there's nothing left. So it is as you keep coming here, your personal self begins to melt until you're gone completely. And you come home.
Life is, and it manifests all these individuals, all these creatures over and over, just keeps, all these creatures keep shaping up and disappearing, and it's, are we like symbols? Is it like a symbol factory? Is it like, why it all appears in consciousness, like there's a meaning behind the symbology? It's cosmological.
There is no meaning whatsoever.
No meaning whatsoever.
You should ask yourself, to whom does it come to? Who sees it this way? And you will come to the conclusion that it doesn't exist. It never existed. And your body doesn't exist, and the question doesn't exist. We have prasad. Mm-hmm. One of our good friends brought delicious cookies, all sizes and shapes. Pass it this way, pass it that way. Eat.
Drink your dinner.
We have some announcements.
Yes, I do.
Listen carefully to these announcements.
I have some more transcript keys here, Dave.
Put them on your phone.
Okay. We have some people already picked some of them. I have 28, 29, and 30. And if you can make 10 or even 15, it would be wonderful. That one?
You're the customer.
Oh, great. Two more. One more. Right. What is that? I don't know, it's probably number 3. Thank you.
Please bring them back.
Yes, please bring them back.
Multiply. Let them multiply.
Go for them.
Did we forget to be beyond?
Oh, yeah.
I'll wait for you always.
Thank you.
As long as we've got 2 minutes here, probably these just 2 words that mean the world to me. And it's silence and being. And just the being. Silence and being.
Mm.
And when I say those 2 words, they just go off into into like nothingness.
Yes.
And it's just beautiful.
It is.
And it's so peaceful. It's wonderful. That's all I can say. So there's just two.